In the meantime, give some thought to the following questions. One, do you recall an argument with Carrie that night at the W? Why you might have appeared upset? Two, as we discussed, the DNA on the clothing she gave to NYPD cannot be linked to a specific date. The items are described as a black skirt and black underwear, no further details, turned over in a plastic bag marked with a W Hotel insignia. She is wearing a black skirt in the W Hotel surveillance video. It's easy to imagine that she might have had a spare laundry bag from a hotel chain she uses regularly. Do you recall if Carrie was wearing a black skirt and underwear the last time you saw her? I would like to argue that the DNA was from an encounter you had with her after Rachel Sutton's complaint became public. Three, photos of injuries. I can argue that these aren't authenticated. There's no way to establish that the injuries are of her or could be self-inflicted. But we should discuss whether you have an alternative explanation. Four, regarding the prostitution report, any judge would likely suppress this as irrelevant and prejudicial, but I have concerns this could get leaked. You've been reluctant to disclose details of other extramarital activities to me, but the fact that they tracked down a prostitute from 3 years ago means they are searching for a pattern of misconduct. Janice Martinez will do the same. We should discuss what that narrative will look like if it all goes public. On that note, any movement regarding Angela's position on this point? I know she's concerned about protecting her background, but there would be no need to mention Pittsburgh, etc., although that would of course be ideal. A sit-down interview with a friendly outlet, maybe her friend Susanna, would be very well-timed. All she'd need to say is that whatever understanding the two of you had is a private matter and that she has full confidence in your innocence. She did not seem receptive when I broached the subject. I know you're not willing to ask directly. I plan to discuss with Colin. 40. When Colin called and offered to bring lunch, I was expecting takeout Chinese or deli sandwiches. Instead, he arrived with a shopping bag with the logo of Gotham Bar and Grill. He began unpacking carefully stacked containers from the bag. I know how cooped up you've been. I figured I could at least bring the best of the city to you. My trip to the courthouse with Jason the previous day had been a rare excursion from the house. You're not working today? He was wearing a fitted plaid shirt and jeans instead of his usual big law suit. Closing got postponed. Figured I deserved a day off. Opening the containers, I spotted all of my favorite dishes. Tuna tartare, seafood salad, mushroom risotto, sliced duck breast, a pork chop. Is a small army joining us? I wanted you to have some choices, and I figured you and Jason could use the leftovers. I started to get plates from the cupboard, but he stopped me. Go have a seat. I sat at the kitchen table while he pulled dishes, silverware, and glasses from the cupboards. A stranger watching us would have assumed he lived here. The finishing touch was the final item waiting in the bag, a bottle of Sansara, wrapped in a chiller sack. You are an angel, I said as he took a seat next to me. I was three bites in when he told me I looked happy. I can't remember the last time I saw you smile. Shows how much I like my food. I was surprised at how content I felt, even though I knew it was fleeting. Jason was gone for the day, his first full workday since his arrest. He was suspended from the university and had lost several clients, but had scheduled back-to-back meetings with the few remaining ones who had agreed to meet with him. Against my advice, he was also planning on recording an episode of his podcast, his first appearance on the program since I had first heard of Carrie Lynch. He insisted that it had to be done. Zach had been carrying on without him, but the Equalonomics brand was Jason's. He seemed oblivious to the increasing numbers of one-star reviews being posted on iTunes of the podcast. Politically correct sex offender, irony much? Boycott the asshat still advertising on this program. Will he be able to pod from prison? Of course this sanctimonious liberal is a rapist, totally predictable. There was a reason I hadn't been leaving the house for meals, or anything else, for that matter. And until this day, Jason had been home too. Only a few weeks ago, that would have been enough to make me happier than any kind of extravagance. But the past 2 weeks had felt stifling and heavy. This house had become joyless. I reached for the duck and slid another slice onto my plate. It was only then that I realized Colin didn't look quite as happy as I felt in that moment. I put my fork down and shook my head. I'm so stupid. What? It's no coincidence you called the first day Jason's out of the house, here in your casual clothes with this amazing meal. Did he send you here? What news does he want to break? What is it now? He reached over and placed a calming hand on my wrist. Angela, I promise. Jason doesn't even know I'm here. He removed his hand and held it up in a scout's honor for emphasis. I believed him. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm constantly on edge. Like, everyone's watching me, talking about me, judging. I can't keep living like this. I totally understand. When I continued eating, the food didn't taste as good. I took another sip of my wine. You do know me so well, though, Colin said. I waited for him to explain. I promised that I was coming here anyway, with food already ordered and wine already chilled, but that look you saw on my face just now? I was trying to muster up the courage to talk to you about something. Susanna called me while I was on my way to Gotham. And? She wanted to know the implications to you and Spencer of this lawsuit against Jason. Is something going on?
Of course something's going on. That woman's trying to take us for every dime she can get.
I'm sure Susanna's just worried about me, but I'm not stupid. We could end up broke. I've already thought about that. I can go back to catering. Spencer can go to public school. The good thing about growing up poor is that you already know what it's like. The thought of returning to the East End was intolerable. We could go somewhere else and start over Scottsdale or Tampa, one of those places that normal people go. It wasn't merely a general sense of worry, Angela. Susanna specifically asked me whether you could protect yourself by filing for divorce before any kind of judgment is entered. I sighed. The thought never crossed my mind. I'll talk to her. Don't worry about it. But that's why I came over. It never crossed my mind either, and I realized I owe you an apology for that. When this all came down, I told you, as your friend, that you didn't have to stay, and you told me you wanted to, at least to get Jason through this. But I didn't talk to you about that decision as a lawyer. And since then, all I've been trying to do is help Jason. Me too. Just hear me out so I can live with myself. If you file for divorce now, there's a good chance that you could take your part of the assets and shield them from a judgment. You could get the house. I could never afford to carry it. That's not the point. You'd have the equity. Half of his pension, half the liquid assets. It's possible they'd argue that your settlement with Jason was a sham to try to protect assets, but given the nature of the allegations against him, it would look completely legitimate. And if you and Jason get back together down the road, well, then so be it. The court's not going to stop you from getting remarried. Or who knows, maybe you'd want to be on your own by then.
Does Jason know you're telling me this?
No. And at this point, I honestly don't give a fuck if I'm violating professional ethics. I figured I'd tell you the options, and if you want me to talk to him about it, I'm happy to. If not, I'll never bring it up again. Not to defend much of what Jason has done, but he really is trying to protect you. It doesn't always feel that way. I probably shouldn't tell you this, but since I'm an open book today, Olivia Randall called me yesterday. She wanted me to see if you'd do some kind of public interview, basically saying you and Jason had an open marriage. Before I began to respond, he had a rebuttal prepared. I told her you would never agree to that, and as your friend, I would never suggest it. Importantly, she said that Jason refused to ask you too.
That woman's a pit bull.
Well, she's Jason's pit bull.
She's really good, huh?
Yeah, that's why I recommended her. Up there with the very best.
And plus, she's a woman, I said.
Well, yes, it doesn't hurt to have a woman speaking up for you on this type of case.
She's pretty, too. I blurted what I had been wondering since I first met her. Are you guys a thing?
We went out a few times. It was a while ago. Olivia's not a relationship person. Why did you ask?
His eyes were filled with a blend of fear and hope. I remembered the way a certain look from Jason used to be able to stir something overwhelming in me. I felt a yearning for something I never thought I would miss. I shrugged, but held his gaze. I was just wondering. It seemed to make sense, the two of you together.
No. Of the women I've let slip by, she's not the one who makes sense for me.
The one. The one he wished he had met at Susanna's party the night she met his best friend instead. That thing you said about splitting things up. What do you think I should do? He sighed heavily.
Please don't ask me that. I'd do anything else for you, but not that. He's still my friend.
And I'm still his wife. He looked up at the ceiling.
Fuck, I hate this.
I leaned toward him, pausing to see if he'd stop me.
He didn't.
I kissed him. Gently at first, and then so urgently I was on my feet, leaning into him. Angela, wait. You said anything. You do anything. He drew in his breath. This is what I need right now, I whispered. I need this.
The first time was clumsy and frenzied, almost violent, the edges of the cold kitchen tiles scraping against my back. When it was over, he rolled me on top of him and held me in his arms. I didn't speak because I didn't want him to leave. I remained perfectly still while he held me, stroked my hair, tickled the small of my back, whatever he wanted. When I felt him respond beneath me, I slid lower, not worrying about whether those flashbacks that came and went beyond my control would suddenly return. I took him by the hand and led him upstairs, opting for Spencer's room, only because I didn't want Colin to see reminders of Jason and stop what we had started. I didn't care that I was in my son's bed, or with Jason's best friend. For the next 2 hours, I wasn't a mother and I wasn't a wife. I was with this man who knew me and wanted me and had made me want him. At least for this day. We did everything I wanted, at the pace I set. And when we were finally done, I asked him to leave and to never mention it again. When he was gone, I ate the food he had brought until I couldn't take another bite. Then went upstairs to my room to reread, once again, the printout that Susanna had given me at the courthouse. 41. I was freshly showered and getting ready to leave a voicemail for Susanna when she picked up. Oh, thank God. I was starting to think you were never going to speak to me again. That would never happen. I hadn't talked to her since we were at the courthouse yesterday. I was giving myself one more day before I was going to call you. But you did call Colin, I said.
He told you?
Of course he did. You asked him whether I should get a divorce. Honey, please don't be mad at me. I am seriously worried about you. What you said to me the other day about Jason, that's not normal in a marriage. You've got me looking at this whole thing in a different light.
You think he's guilty?
No, I didn't say that. The way she said it made it clear that she didn't not say it either. Hear me out. I don't think it's for me or even you to decide whether he did this or not. He has the courts for that. My main priority is to look out for my best friend and her son.
I could feel the phone start to shake in my hand. This didn't feel real.
Look, when Carrie first came forward, I assumed she'd be some kook and a DNA test would clear the whole thing up. Then when the DNA came back, I thought, well, so he's an asshole who cheated on my friend, but he's not a criminal. I was standing right next to you in the bunker, ready to defend him because he's our Jason. But I'm stepping back now, Angela. He's not the good guy here. Whether he's guilty or not, he's a liar and a cheater. He hired a fucking prostitute, for Christ's sake, and that's only the one time you know about. And then whatever happened between the two of you, it sounds like he let you think all these years it was somehow your fault. And I don't think it was. If he was doing something you didn't want him to do, that is never your fault. You don't need to tell me what rape is. I'm sorry, but I think that's exactly what I need to do. The article she gave me was supposedly an explanation for why some women don't realize when they've experienced an assault that would legally constitute rape. According to the author, women are taught to fear strangers who lurk in alleys and behind bushes, emerging from the shadows with a gun or a knife to attack us when we least expect it. We're also taught that victims of the crime are damaged, broken like Humpty Dumpty, never to be put back together again. In reality, most women are attacked by someone they know. The essay said about 80%. Only about 11% of cases involve a weapon. The author suggested that women underreport sexual assault because they aren't sure it's a crime when their case doesn't fit the armed stranger stereotype. They tell themselves it was a drunken date gone bad, that he must not have heard them say no, that it was somehow their fault. She posited that cognitive dissonance was at work. For their own psychological survival, women would rather excuse what happened to them than to label themselves with the ultimate stigma, rape victim. Some went so far as to apologize to their assailants for even momentarily suggesting that the R word might apply. Susanna was trying to tell me I was one of those women. You went through something unimaginably horrible as a teenager, Angela. I'm not equating anything that may have happened with Jason to that, but isn't it possible that you convinced yourself it was normal because at least it wasn't what you suffered through before? Don't even compare them. I'm not. Jason is not that Franklin monster. But that doesn't mean Jason is good or loving.
You obviously experienced something traumatic with him. I know how much you love him. And then you told me that something happened between you, and for 3 years you've been allowing yourself to live in this constructed world, trying to pretend like you're okay, the way you always have. I really did think we were okay. I don't understand why this is happening. Please trust me. I've spoken to so many survivors about this, women who spent years feeling alone and self-conscious, and then they tell the story of what happened to them, and it's like the sky opens up. What happened that night with Jason? I promise you can tell me. I was regretting ever mentioning this to her. I could tell she was never going to leave me alone until I gave her some explanation. We were, you know, and everything was good, really good, better than usual. And then I told him that he could tie me up. Susanna was silent on the other end of the line. I was glad I was telling her this over the phone. I felt my face burning. I had read one of those magazine articles about how to spice things up in the bedroom and got it into my head that I needed to make an effort. He was pretty into it when I was the one to bring it up. He took a belt and he wrapped it around my wrists. When he buckled it to the headboard, it's like a switch flipped. I freaked out and I had a flashback, but it was too late. I couldn't move my arms. I was just there. When it was over, he realized I was upset and felt guilty about it. I think it made him afraid to touch me again. What do you mean it was too late? I mean, I had already told him I wanted to do it. But when you freaked out, what happened? I closed my eyes, not wanting to answer her question. Angela, what happened? I was trying to pull my arms free and telling him to stop, but he kept going. He didn't realize until after, when I was crying. And then we never really talked about it. It was this thing we couldn't get past. I could feel Susanna thinking through the phone line. Okay, this is what we're doing, she announced. You're packing a bag and coming over here right now, and I'm hiring a separate lawyer for you. I'm fine. Damn it! I had to hold the phone away from my ear. I could not remember ever hearing her raise her voice, let alone to me. Stop saying you're fine. You may think you're fine, but your situation is not. Nothing's changed. Of course it has. Angela, don't you see it? What you described to me, that is rape. The word felt like a punch. You're his wife, and you were struggling and crying and saying no, and he... That is a crime. And if he did that to you, he could have done it to Carrie Lynch, too. And that bullshit story he told you about changing his clothes in front of his intern? No, you have to get out of that house before this all comes crashing down. I'm not going to let you stand by his side while he loses everything. You have to leave right now. When I called Colin earlier, he said that Jason's lawyer already emailed him the discovery she got from the DA. You were in court yesterday. If she was stalling the criminal case in hopes of buying that woman off, the prosecutor himself said so. They could settle that case at any second. You have to protect yourself and Spencer. I was still reeling from her initial response. I was replaying that whole night in my head, looking at my bed as if I were an outsider, picturing myself with my wrists above my head, my face turned away from him. That wouldn't have been a signal to him that something was wrong. I often turned my head. It was my way of dealing with the flashbacks. I closed my eyes and waited for them to stop. I never told him, so I couldn't fault him for that. But that night was different. I was struggling, thrashing, trying to get free. I said his name, I said stop, and I said no, but he was in some other place. Like, I wasn't there until it was over. And while I was picturing myself naked and crying with my arms bound while my husband processed what had happened between us, Susanna was talking about civil settlements and assets and timing and filing dates. I didn't like Susanna's use of the same word to describe that night with Jason and the 3 years of Charles Franklin's torture. They were different. But what happened with Jason definitely wasn't the same as what I just experienced with Colin. That's why I had needed him today, to remember what it was like to share that act with someone who loved me. Maybe it was using him, and maybe someday I would apologize, but for now, it was something special. Only for me. I would add it to my box of secrets. I thought about what my mother said right after Rachel Sutton came forward. Misunderstandings don't happen when a situation is black and white. They only happen when there are shades of gray, when there could be two different versions of the same damn thing. I was seeing two versions of what happened that night with Jason. The one I believed for the past 3 years, and the one I was seeing now. I'm sorry, Susanna. I can't do this right now. It's too much. It was taking everything for me not to scream. Can I come over, please? No, but thank you, I offered quickly. I know you're looking out for me, and I promise I'll call you tomorrow. I needed to think, and I needed to read. I reached for my laptop and logged into Jason's email account. Susanna said Olivia had sent the case evidence. I wanted to see it for myself. My laptop was still open, in front of me on the bed, when Jason got home. He was emptying the contents of his pockets onto the tray on his nightstand.
Hey, I just talked to Olivia. Good news, the plaintiff's attorney is open to settling. The idea of paying anyone a dime makes me sick to my stomach, but this might finally be going away. I can always do consulting work for another shop, but we may need to sell the house. I don't have an exact number yet. I swear I'll make it up.
He didn't seem to notice that I was glaring at him as he ran on about various settlement numbers, each of them more than my parents ever made in their best decade combined. He seemed to have forgotten that I told him that I'd stand by him through this because I believed he was innocent and knew he needed me. He thought I would celebrate the good news of paying off his former mistress, or maybe victim, or both, as if he'd never cheated on me, as if there was no possibility that I was leaving. Get out.
Angela, get out. Get out!
I was slamming the laptop up and down on the comforter, seconds away from hurling it at him. I jumped from the bed and charged at him, pushing him out of the door to the staircase. I swear to God, get out of this house, now, or so help me, I will call the DA myself and tell them whatever they want to hear. He turned when he reached the bottom of the staircase, one hand on the front doorknob. He looked confused and hurt. He was waiting for me to change my mind. Go. I just need some time. This is all too much. His gaze dropped to the floor.
I don't understand what happened.
Seriously, I can't look at you right now. You need to leave. When he was gone, I locked the door, knowing that his keys were still on the nightstand. I had the house to myself again, and it felt good. When Spencer called that evening, he told me about his new friend, Isaac, who used to be named Isabel. Spencer said some of the non-city kids were freaked out until it turned out Isaac was basically better at everything than they were. I was about to say goodbye when he surprised me by asking to say hi to Dad. Oh, sweetie, I'm so sorry. I forgot an avocado from the market and asked him to run over to Citarella. I immediately regretted the specificity of the lie, but Spencer didn't seem to suspect anything. All right, I guess, could you tell him that I did want to say hi? Absolutely. He's going to be so upset to miss you. Whatever. He was putting on a tough front, but I could tell that his self-titled ice age against his father was starting to thaw. I had no idea how I was going to tell him the truth if I ever figured out what that was. I had just hung up when my cell phone rang again. The screen read, Colin, home. I was about to decline the call until I realized how much I wanted to hear his voice. Hey.
We need to talk.
The voice wasn't Colin's. Of course, Jason had gone to his best friend's apartment. I said I needed some time. An hour isn't time.
Angela.
Don't call me. I will call you when I'm ready. If you call me before then, I'll know you don't respect what I want. I thought about the way Colin looked at me only hours earlier when I told him as he left that I didn't want him ever to mention what happened between us unless I brought it up first. It was a look of acceptance. He understood that I knew things about myself that he did not. I had just made a similar request of Jason. I turned my phone off, then reached over to his nightstand and turned his off for good measure. 42. Corinne pounded on the Powell's front door again. What kind of people don't have a bell or a knocker for a house this size? She made herself comfortable on the stoop steps and pulled the rubber band from the New York Times sitting on the welcome mat. It was nearly 3 o'clock. Someone would show up eventually. She had skimmed the front page headlines when she heard locks tumbling behind her. Rising from the steps, she turned to find Angela Powell in checkered pajama pants and a Stanford sweatshirt. Sorry, I assumed you'd be up. Migraine. Oh, the worst. Apple cider vinegar with honey. It does the trick for me. I did try to call first. Angela didn't bother to mask her disinterest. So when I didn't answer, you just came over instead of contacting our lawyer? I told you before, Olivia Randall's not your lawyer. She's Jason's. Well, in case you haven't heard, the criminal case is on pause. Angela started to close the door, but Corinne extended her arm. That's the litigation, Mrs. Powell. Police can still investigate cases, especially new cases. Angela inched the door open farther, but still didn't allow Corinne to enter. Is your husband home? No. He's working to keep his clients, despite being falsely accused of a heinous crime. And he was working last night? He was here. You were with him. How else would I know unless I was with him? Angela sounded proud, as if she had outwitted an adversary. A friend brought over a huge bag of food for the day. Thanks to you people, we can't even show our faces around New York City these days. What friend? Colin Harris. He brought takeout from Gotham. Call a restaurant. There was enough for lunch and dinner. What's this about? Carrie Lynch is missing. For the first time since she opened the door, Angela paused, allowing the words to register as she formulated her comeback. Maybe she realized that she was about to be exposed as a liar, framing an innocent man to cover up for a company that does business with warlords. That's a harsh allegation about a missing woman. Forgive me if I don't feel sorry for her. Was Mr. Harris also here with you last night? No, just us. We couldn't fall asleep and watched La La Land in bed. On TV, we streamed it. Where's your son? Camp? Upstate? He called last night, she added. My cell phone around 7:30. You can verify that, too. Corinne nodded. She'd get the phone records and make sure the information lined up. And he spoke to both of you? Yes, of course. Now, if we're done, I'd start looking more carefully at Miss Lynch if I were you. You mean for Miss Lynch? No, I mean at her. Because I guarantee that whatever she's pulling right now, it has something to do with the scam she's running with her employer. Angela stepped aside and gestured for Corinne to come in. Feel free to take a look. I assure you, she's not here. Corinne pursed her lips and nodded, realizing that she wasn't going to get the response she'd been hoping for. I know you don't believe me, Angela, but I'm on your side. How well do you really know your husband? I know he's innocent. Corinne might have pressed harder if she hadn't known about this woman's past. At some point, you're no longer a bystander. You become an enabler. And after that, I can no longer help you. Don't let Jason take you and your boy down with him. 43. The second the door closed, I began shaking. I calmed myself by forcing myself to think through every task I needed to complete in a very precise order. Once the Impala was gone, I turned on my cell phone and waited for it to power up. I checked my voicemail. The only message besides the detectives was from Susanna asking if I was mad at her. Jason had respected my request to give me some space. My first call was to Olivia Randall. I left a message telling her that the police had come to the house asking about Jason's whereabouts the previous night and that I'd explained that he'd been with me all night. My next call was to Colin. Hey, you. His voice was gentle. There was so much I wanted to say, but all I could think about was the fact that I had just lied to a detective. Where are you? Closing in Midtown? He sounded alarmed. Are you all right? Was Jason at your apartment last night? Yeah, he said you had a fight, a really bad one. He lowered his voice further. At first, I was worried he came to me because of what happened with us yesterday, but he said he wanted to crash for the night. What's going on? Carrie Lynch is missing. What? Since when? I don't know, but a detective was just here asking me where Jason was last night, and she also said Carrie was missing. Since last night is hardly missing. I was going to say he was at your apartment, I said. And then I realized how bad that would look. I was so done with him last night, but when she started asking me questions with that accusing tone, my instincts kicked in. I've gotten so used to jumping to his defense, I did it on autopilot. Should I call her and tell her the truth? I have her number. He paused, clearly weighing the options. No, it's fine. Whether he was with me or with you is irrelevant. Changing your story now will only look worse, and they could wind up targeting you for not coming clean in the first place. But what if they find out I lied? They won't. The only way that would happen is if Jason was somewhere other than my place and he wasn't. So, your story's fine. Okay, but Jason really was there with you, right? Every minute? I pressed a palm against my eyes, wondering if I was getting an actual migraine. Yes, of course. Don't worry about it. Given Carrie's history, she probably hooked up with a guy and will turn up later tonight. As I hung up, I realized that just as I had grown accustomed to covering for Jason, Colin could be doing the same, especially after what had happened between us the day before. Colin was hardly ever home. Had he really stayed at the apartment all night with Jason? and I thought about Spencer. I had managed to drag him into my lie. If I called him now, they'd say I told him to back up the false alibi. I tried to imagine what Spencer would do if the police contacted him. If I had to guess, he would tell them he wasn't saying a word without his mom. It was the way I raised him. I was his person. On the other hand, if he didn't see the harm, and he wouldn't because I had sent him up to that camp so he'd be oblivious about what was happening here, he'd repeat my stupid story about sending Jason out for an avocado. And then what? I was trying to decide what to do when my phone rang. A 914 area code. Westchester. Spencer's camp counselor. I steadied my voice. Hi, Kate. Is everything all right? Spencer's fine, but I wanted to let you know that he's been in the infirmary. He managed to get into some poison ivy. Can I talk to him? Yep, I'm sure he'd like that. Hey, kiddo. You doing okay? I want to cut my left arm off, but I'll probably live. It's just like hell. They gave you something? Some stinky lotion and a Benadryl, but she won't give me the hard stuff. He was yelling to make sure Kate heard the last part. Good. Hey, Spencer, I need to ask you something, okay? If anyone, anyone at all, asks you about when you called last night, I need you to tell them that you spoke to both me and Dad, okay? Mom, what's wrong? I just need you to do that for me, okay? I tried to keep my voice from cracking. I was asking the most honest person I knew to lie. Yeah, okay. Spencer would do whatever I requested, in part because I never abused the privilege. I saw how other moms barked orders at their kids. I never told Spencer to do anything blindly, without explanation, not even to talk to his own father when he was angry at him. I hung up, ashamed that my son's loyalty had provided a solution to my problem, but relieved. There had to be a reason for the timing, right? I saw it as a sign that the gods were trying to help. My final call was to Jason's office. He had told me that he had back-to-back client meetings, trying to save some business. He wouldn't have canceled them. Fair share strategies, this is Zach. Jason had forwarded his direct line to Zach's extension. Hey, Zach, it's Angela. Ah, yes. Jason's in a meeting, but he told me to interrupt him if he called. The brief hold felt like an eternity. I had let these allegations from other women get into my head. When I saw Jason yesterday, I had convinced myself that he was guilty of victimizing not only them, but me. I had even wondered if he had ever really loved me. Now, I knew how wrong I had been. He wasn't perfect, but he wasn't a predator. I'm so glad you called. I had kicked him out of his own house, and yet he sounded genuinely happy to hear my voice. Jason, Carrie Lynch is missing. Please tell me you didn't do this because of me. 44. From Jason Powell to olivia.randall@ellisonrandall.com. RE Discovery from NYPD/DA, date June 7th. Hi, Olivia. Sorry for the delay. Needless to say, a lot has happened since you sent me the discovery you got from the DA yesterday. I also just left you a voicemail message about Detective Duncan going to the house today to question Angela. Angela said she left you a message, too. Apparently, Carrie is missing, whatever that means. As you can imagine, I am deeply disturbed that their first instinct was to show up at our home. Make sure you read to the end for notes on this. In response to the questions from your earlier email, here are my thoughts, followed by, more importantly, new developments. One, regarding our argument that night at the W, we should discuss this further because the dynamics are complicated. Here's the short version. After dinner on 410, we were intimate in her room. She wanted me to stay the night, but of course I could not. That never stopped her from asking. In an act of very bad timing, I decided to talk to her again before I left about my concerns regarding Oasis. She knew I was in a conflicted position, not only because I had investors with them, but also because she worked for them and I cared about her. I had talked to her about the possibility of becoming a whistleblower and brought it up with her again. At that point, I thought the problems were limited to projects in Tanzania and Mozambique, which could mean that someone handling the operations in Africa was responsible. But that night, she said my concerns shed new light on some internal memos she'd been CC'd on. She's the one who made me suspect that corruption might be par for the course for Oasis. I pressed her for details, but she shut down. From that moment on, she was basically promising to give me the documents and help me go whistleblower if I left Angela for her. A test of my commitment to fulfill promises I never should have made.
If the video shows us fighting, it's because I was telling her that she could not be complicit if she knew Oasis was in bed with dictators and warlords. I remember thinking when I stepped into the elevator, what have I done? I knew I had messed up getting tied up with Oasis. Two, regarding the clothes Carrie was wearing, she wears knee-length, skinny black skirts more often than not, and almost always wears a black lace thong, to my knowledge. If I had to guess, whatever clothing she was wearing her last time together at her house will line up with what she was wearing in the hotel video, if she's not stupid. Three, regarding the injuries to her wrists, yes, we engaged in that activity multiple times. The last time we were together, she specifically asked that I use my belt. I remember she said tighter twice. I was worried it was too rough, but she was encouraging. I now realize why. I'm a fool. There's no doubt in my mind those photos are from 519 at her house, not 410 at the W. Four, regarding your attempt, once again, to put Angela out front, as we've discussed, this is a deal breaker. Angela has been through enough. Mention this again, and I'll need to find a different lawyer. You indicated yesterday that their attorney was open to a settlement. If it will put all this behind us, I'll pay. Just tell me the number. Important. While I was at work today, Detective Duncan questioned Angela without counsel at our home regarding my whereabouts last night. I assume this must be when Carrie went missing. As she explained, we were home together from the time I finished client meetings, got home around 6:15, until we fell asleep. Our son called from camp shortly before 7:30. We ate takeout from Gotham, then stayed up late and watched La La Land. I am attaching the following documents, should they prove helpful. One, photo of Angela's phone. As you know, we have no landline. Showing call from Spencer's camp, ending 7:23 p.m. Two, receipt from Gotham. Colin brought us food for the whole day. Three, printout from Amazon Prime Movie Rental, showing streaming time starting at 11:02 p.m. What more could they want from me other than a webcam in my house, which I would have agreed to if I had known this nonsense would happen. I have no idea what Carrie's trying to pull, but trust me, it's about money and getting back at me. You saw that movie Gone Girl, right? She's that batshit crazy about me not leaving Angela for her. Granted, I was a shithead, but I don't deserve this. Give me a call to discuss. Thanks, as always, for everything. I still can't believe this is happening.
45. Corinne found out Carrie Lynch was missing when a sergeant with the Port Washington Police Department called. According to him, Carrie Lynch's dog walker showed up at her house to walk Carrie's Bichon Frise, Snowball. The Long Island cop must have been a dog person because he couldn't just say dog. He had both the breed and the name at his fingertips. The dog walker did her usual routine with Snowball, but noticed as she returned his leash to its hook in the mudroom that Carrie's purse and briefcase were both on the bench. She called out for Carrie, then looked in the attached garage and saw her car. When she walked into the kitchen, she found takeout containers on the counter and dishes in the sink. She had never seen a spot of dirt in Carrie's house before. Growing concerned, the walker called Carrie's cell to make sure everything was okay and heard her own call come through on a cell left on the living room sofa. When she tried Carrie's office, they said she hadn't come into work that day and that they had been trying to reach her. The walker's next call was to 911. When the sergeant who got the call out realized Carrie was the woman who had accused Jason Powell of sexual assault, he contacted Corinne. Corinne's first call had been to Brian King. The second was to Janice Martinez, who had not bothered to get back to her until now, after a full day had passed. Sorry, Detective, I've been swamped. All I needed was a phone call to find out the last time you spoke to Carrie Lynch. My communications with my clients are... Give it a rest. I'm not asking about conversations. When I first called you, Carrie had only missed one day of work. We're now on day two. She left behind her wallet, cell phone, ID, car, and dog. It's not looking good. The local police had called Grapevine, the Italian restaurant whose takeout containers were found in Carrie's kitchen. According to the restaurant, her order, eggplant parmesan and a chicken Caesar salad, went out at 6:30 the evening before the dog walker found the house empty. Fine, Martinez said. I haven't spoken to her since Wednesday. That was 2 days ago, the last time she was seen. What time? Hold on. Following a short pause, she said, 3 o'clock to 3:15. This was a phone call? If Corinne had to guess, it was an 8-minute call rounded to the nearest quarter hour for billing purposes. Yeah, her cell. I heard her tell someone she was on the phone at one point. I got the impression she was in her office. So Carrie had been at work until at least 3:15.
She was likely home by 6:30 to order takeout. Then nothing.
Did you discuss anything that might explain why she's gone now?
Corinne asked.
No, that's off limits.
There are exceptions to privilege, Corinne said. Your client could be in danger.
Could be, are the key words.
I need to talk to bar counsel for advice. I really am not sure what to do under the circumstances, and that's not something you're going to hear me say too often.
It sounds to me as if you're confirming that something happened Wednesday that might be relevant.
I'm not, because I can't.
Let me figure out what the options are, and I'll get back to you. I promise.
Corinne hung up and called the Port Washington sergeant again. His name was Mike Netter. She wondered if he got as many cracks about his name as she did. She started the conversation by letting him know that Janice Martinez had finally gotten back to her. This, after all, was his case, not hers.
She hasn't talked to Carrie since 1515 on Wednesday.
Any new information on your end?
Talked to a friend of hers at work, a girl named Samantha Hicks. She said Carrie was in on Wednesday, out yesterday and today. She didn't know much more. She said she couldn't think of any reason she'd be gone except the stress of everything that was happening. First the work trouble, plus the rape, then the media attention, not to mention a breakup. Believe me, I got an earful.
Corinne's mind was swirling with questions. She scribbled key words on her notepad so she wouldn't forget them.
She told this friend Samantha about the rape after it happened?
Carrie said she never spoke to anyone about it until she reported it to Corinne.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to suggest that. Samantha only heard about it when everyone else did, at the big press conference the lawyer held.
Did she say what the problems were at work?
Nah, pretty vague. Something about Carrie being in the doghouse, quote-unquote, for the last few years.
That timing lined up with what Carrie had told Corinne about her affair with the company's CEO, Tom Fisher.
And what about the breakup? Was that also a few years ago?
Well, she said Carrie started talking about the dude maybe 5 months ago. She referred to him as Jay, but never gave a last name and kept blowing her off about getting to meet him. Samantha even asked her once point blank if the guy might be married.
I heard all about how Carrie was smart in every way, except she falls head over heels for the wrong guys and lives her whole life around them. I've got a sister like that. Anyway, Carrie stopped talking about the guy around the time the news of her complaint against Powell came out, so now I gotta figure out who Jay is.
Didn't find anyone by that name on her cell phone, and that seems weird.
I'll have my tech guy look at it to see if maybe it all got deleted.
And, oh, shit, I still need to find that delivery guy from the restaurant.
Corinne hung up, trying to quell the worry building in the back of her mind.
Carrie was a beautiful, successful single woman. Of course she probably had a boyfriend. There's no reason that would have come up in conversation with Corinne. And maybe Carrie was secretive about him at work because she'd already been churned through the gossip mill over her affair with Tom Fisher.
But she couldn't ignore the warning signs. If Jason Powell was telling the truth about an affair with Carrie, she might have referred to him as Jay around the office to keep the relationship on the down low. She had told Brian King that it really didn't matter to her whether Carrie had had an affair with Jason, but now that the evidence was sitting there, she wanted to know the truth. But the missing person case belonged to Port Washington police, and her case against Powell was on hold. Corinne didn't have an angle to work.
Corinne walked the 20 feet to her lieutenant's office and tapped on the open door. After she filled him in on what she knew about Carrie's disappearance, he said what she expected. Let Port Washington handle the investigation, and in the meantime, hope they find her alive and well. She couldn't argue with his logic, but she was still standing in his doorway.
Damn it, Duncan, I got detectives I have to yell at to do more work. And now I'm yelling at you to give it a rest. Go home.
It's only 2 o'clock.
Not literally. I mean, Jesus, get out of here.
If she doesn't turn up in the next day or two, we can talk again.
Until then, she's Long Island's problem.
Corinne was at her desk an hour later when the number for the main switchboard at the district attorney's office appeared on her cell phone screen.
Duncan?
It's King.
He was back to being King now, not Brian. She preferred it that way. She started to fill him in on her conversation with Sergeant Netter, but he interrupted.
The pictures of Carrie's wrists. How do we have those files?
What do you mean?
I mean, how did we physically get them? She took the photos herself, right?
Yeah.
So how did she send them to you? Email, text, did you plug in her phone? Like, technically, how did we get them? You gave them to me as JPEG files.
Corinne woke up her computer and looked through old emails to jog her memory.
Yeah, she emailed them to me as attachments. Straight from her phone? Right in front of you?
No, she showed them to me on her phone and sent them to me when she got home. Why?
Because Olivia fucking Randall swears there's a problem with them, but won't tell me how she knows that. Specifically, she wants to confirm the date the photographs were taken.
I'm looking at the files on my computer. The date on my files is May 19th, but that's when she sent them to me.
Well, I just learned way more than I wanted to about digital photographs from our geek here. It looks like Carrie exported the original photograph into a JPEG file before she sent it to you, which is why the date on the file is the date she filed her complaint. But if you look at the photo's properties, it says the image is from the night of April 10th, which is the night she says he assaulted her at the W. No problem, right? Except Olivia is saying you can easily change that on any Mac. She's demanding that we produce the actual device used to take the photograph so she can examine the microdata to see if the date was changed.
She thinks Carrie took the pictures later and lined them up with the date we'd have hotel footage.
That's my guess. Please tell me you looked at Carrie's wrist the day she made the complaint.
Corinne closed her eyes. Of course not. She said the assault was 6 weeks earlier, and before you ask, she was wearing a long-sleeve dress. I wouldn't have noticed if she'd still had the marks.
Damn it.
I found out something else that's not going to make you very happy either. She summed up her reasons for believing that Carrie's boyfriend, Jay, might have been Jason Powell.
And you said before it doesn't matter.
I didn't think before that she might be lying about the date of those pictures. The guy with the PD in Port Washington mentioned looking at contacts in Carrie's phone, so he must have gotten a warrant to unlock it. Let me call him. Netter picked up immediately. You still have Carrie's phone there?
He said that he did.
Can you do me a favor and look through her photographs? I'm looking for April 10th.
I don't see anything.
Nothing?
No, I got a picture of a meatball pizza on April 8th and a picture of Snowball 4 days later.
What am I looking for? Three pictures of injuries on her wrists. Scroll through and see if you can find anything. Maybe it's closer to May 19th?
Nope, nothing.
Are you sure?
You want to drive out here or what? I'm telling you, it's not here.
Carrie must have deleted the photos after she emailed them to Corinne.
And I got a hold of that restaurant guy. He's out surfing in Montauk today, but he's coming back tomorrow to work a shift. I was supposed to talk to him at 4.
Tomorrow was Saturday, her day off.
Fuck it.
What else was she going to do? Do you mind if I come out and meet him with you?
No skin off my back.
46.
Jerry would let me walk if I knocked you into a coma right now. The nice thing about Susanna was that I never needed to wonder what she was actually thinking. No offense, but I want to run your life until you come to your senses. We were in her apartment on Central Park South. It was Saturday, the only day when she didn't have studio obligations. When I arrived at 11, she had her sideboard covered with Bloody Mary mix and vodka, lox and bagels, caviar and blinis, and a bottle of chilled and very expensive champagne. She told me she splurged because I had been living like a hermit for nearly a month. But now the caviar and blinis were gone, I was picking at the remaining lox and capers, and she was threatening to knock me out for defending Jason. For all we know, she's turned up by now, I said. I mean, she slept with my husband. She could be hooking up with anyone for a night or two. Turned up? I don't think an NYPD detective would show up at your door if they thought she was off on a romantic sojourn. I had filled Susanna in on Detective Duncan's visit to the house, as well as the alibi I ended up offering for Jason. Jason was back at the house with me now, and he, Colin, and I had gotten her story straight. We even printed out evidence of Spencer's call to my phone and the receipt from my movie rental for Olivia. Susanna sounded like a prosecutor, laying out Jason's motive to kill Carrie Lynch. His criminal case was only paused for a month. The woman had filed a civil suit seeking millions of dollars in damages. His career, reputation, and future hung in the balance. I can't believe we're having this conversation. We're talking about Jason. He didn't kill anyone. People get pushed to the brink and do things you never expect. I mean, I never thought you'd lie to the police. You not only lied for him, you dragged Spencer into it. And you tripled down on it by giving all those documents to Jason's lawyer. It's one thing to stand by his side, Angela, but that's obstruction of justice. You're affirmatively doing something wrong to cover up for him. It's not covering up for him if he was at Collins' house. Whether he was at our place or Collins' is irrelevant. The point is, he wasn't anywhere near Carrie Lynch's. Why are you so certain of that? You know Colin, he's convinced Jason is innocent. If he thinks vouching for him will put your mind at ease, he would totally lie for him. If I had that money, I'd say Colin was telling the truth about being with Jason. But if I had to bet my arm, I wouldn't take that wager. I didn't know
where Jason was Wednesday night, in that sense of the word. I can't explain it, Susanna. When you've got a cop standing right there asking, where was your husband, you just start talking. I'm actually sort of proud of myself that I managed to lie so strategically. I could have screwed it up royally. Well, that's comforting. If this all goes south, maybe you can run a flimflam ragger from prison. I'm not going to prison. You lied to a detective. How many times do I have to say that before it sinks in? Maybe you should have bought less hooch if you wanted me to pay attention to reality. I refilled my flute, even though it wasn't empty yet. I'm not kidding, Angela. The last time we talked, it sounded like you were starting to realize Jason might have another side to him, including the way he treats you. Now you're back to being his biggest offender. I put my glass down and looked her directly in the eye. Trust me, I am not a fan of his right now. What he did to me was bad, really bad. And he's no angel. But I'm not willing to use the word you want me to use for what happened between us that night. And he's definitely not a murderer. Just the thought of it is ridiculous. Are you telling me that you can picture Jason, our Jason, driving out to that woman's house, killing her somehow, and hiding her body in the woods somewhere? I heard my own voice shake. I didn't want to let my mind picture the scene. She held my gaze and then looked away and shook her head. Okay, good. Well, at least we agree on that. My husband's not a murderer. Cheers! I'm only looking out for you. For fuck's sake, Susanna, I know that. She flinched. I had never snapped at her like that before. I reached over and gave her shoulder a quick squeeze. I'm so sorry. I just want this to be over. Well, what if it's not? It will be at some point. You need to protect yourself before then. Just tell me this. If the DA pulls you into a grand jury and asks you where Jason was, what are you going to do? She kept pressing me until I finally answered. I wouldn't lie under oath. You're sure? You promise? Yes, I wouldn't cross that line. But they're not going to do that. Stop worrying. That girl, woman, Carrie, whatever, she'll turn up any second. I was doing my best to sound confident, and the alcohol was helping. But inside, I knew my entire life was about to change. It had to. After two cups of coffee and a cleaning frenzy, I was feeling nearly sober by the time Jason got home. The entire contents of the pantry were emptied on our kitchen table, countertops, and floor. I had purged a garbage bag full of half-eaten packages of nuts, chips, crackers, spaghetti, hot cocoa, oatmeal, everything that needed to go, and had a plan to organize what was left. Two boxes of Nicorette were set aside near the doorway.
Are we having a food drive?
You didn't get my message? He checked his phone.
It was off.
His phone was always off. I want you to go to Collins. He said he'll wait for you there. I finished wiping down the final shelf. Not a single breadcrumb or a grain of rice in sight.
Are we fighting again? I thought we were fine.
So much had changed in the 3 days since I'd thrown him out of the house to stay with Colin for the night. Just go talk to Colin. I don't want to have this conversation. He'll explain it to you.
Is this about Carrie again? You can't possibly think I hurt someone.
I was focusing on my stacks of organic low-sodium chicken broth as if I were constructing a landmark bridge. Please, it will all make sense once you're with Colin. If you don't agree with me, you can come back and we'll talk it out.
Angela,
just go. I promise. Put on your economist hat. You'll see, objectively, it's the right thing to do. I was already crying by the time I heard the front door shut, picturing the scene that was going to play out when Jason got to Colin's apartment. I had called Colin as soon as I got home from Susanna's. He explained it to me once again. If I filed for divorce before a civil judgment against Jason was rendered, our divorce could proceed as if we were any normal couple going our separate ways. The burden would be on any creditor of Jason to come after me, arguing that we had only gotten divorced as a way to shelter assets from liability. I could play the finally had it up to here wife card. After all, the kindest version of the facts was that Jason had been a serial adulterer. Under the circumstances, who else would have put up with all of this until now except me? To an outsider, it would sound cruel asking my husband's best friend, the man I'd cheated with 3 days ago, to serve the divorce papers. But after what I'd learned about Jason in the last month, I didn't know what a normal process was for us anymore. Colin was exactly the right messenger, because he loved us both.